Just before I started the draft, today's material for this second session of the day, I saw a little article. And this little article talked about what it's like when a person goes to see a doctor, especially a specialist. There's some information out now which says that if you go to see a specialist, that specialist will often listen to you for 11 seconds. After the specialist says, "Hi, how are you? What's your name?" the clock starts ticking. Now, not literally. But it's been estimated that the specialist will listen to you for 11 seconds, and after the 11 seconds are up, they tune you out. Why would specialists do that? Well, the reason for that was not specifically given in the article, but we do know that as we look at doctors, especially specialists, that oftentimes they are very, very busy. One 66-year-old woman went to see a specialist, ear, nose, and throat specialist, and her recollection of the event was, he looked in my nose, he said, "It's inflamed, go see the nurse for meds. Have a good day." Now, I'm not quite sure how fast that happened, but it sounds like she got her 11 seconds and maybe a minute or two after that. It's been said that some doctors, especially specialists, seem like they're on roller skates as they go from patient to patient. Now, there may be a lot of reasons, multiple reasons, for why doctors seem so rushed. But one reason would seem to be the abundance of specialists. So many people have different problems and diseases, and there just seems to be no end. When we go into a waiting room, whether it's a specialist or maybe it's a general practitioner, it may seem full. In Matthew chapter 26 and verse 11, Jesus made a point about the poor. He said, "The poor will always be with you." In the first century, that certainly was true. The disciples were certainly able to look in a lot of places and just see poor people upon poor people. But even though Jesus in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 11 emphasized the poor, could it not also be said the sick will also be with you? That certainly was true in the first century. We know that because of passages like Matthew chapter 4 and verse 23. Matthew talked about all manner of disease. And then he said all manner of sickness. There were a lot of sick people in the first century. Today, we also find a lot of sick people. Some years ago, I was in the country of Nicaragua and part of a medical mission team, not that I was doing any doctoring. But I can still remember, and this image reminded me of that, as I was coming back from some Bible study outings, coming back to the compound, an ex-prison where we were staying. I can still remember very vividly walking by a line of people. It looked like they were giving away cars because everybody and their brothers seemed to show up. A huge line of people that was at least a mile long, maybe closer to two. I can remember those hot days where people would get up early, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning and come out and begin to stand in line, even though I don't think they started treating people until 6 or 6:30. They heard that Americans had come. They heard that there were Americans there with medicine. And there were no surgical suites. It wasn't like they were passing out some fancy medicine or that they were doing some extensive procedures. It was basic stuff. And yet the people came in droves. For every 10 people who were helped, there were surely 100 or 1,000 more that could have been added. Physicians. As you think about the workload that they have, as you enter into the waiting room, as you see the people coming and going, is it any surprise that some get burned out? Is it any shock that some quit because there's a constant parade of sick people at the door? Someone says, "Well, I can understand that when it comes to doctors." If we can understand that with physicians, what if we take that and try to apply that to the Christian life? Is there also not a parallel here to living a life for God? Well, yes, there is. As we think about being part of a local congregation, we can find some of the same issues cropping up time after time. You might be part of a congregation where there is a steady stream of benevolent cases. Sometimes that might happen in an inner city congregation. Or maybe you are living in an area where you have a high degree of poverty. And it just seems like day after day after day, hour after hour, there are people knocking on the door and saying, "We need this, we want this, can you help me in this way?" There are some congregations where you have chronic complainers. It seems like someone is always knocking at the door, calling or sending an email and saying, "Something is not right, something's not good." And then you have some congregations where people seem to be at the throats of each other. And again, it's just nonstop. We know that because of Corinth. Doctors, as you think about the flow of traffic which comes their way, sometimes perhaps they become almost numb to the number of people who see just one more face, one more set of charts, listening to some more complaints. Kim talked about this morning, as far as a communion meditation, about thinking about Jesus on the cross. That's important. But can you also imagine Jesus, the steady parade of sick people that came? Matthew chapter 4, verses 23 and 24, day in and day out. There is this one Jesus, and he has the ability to heal, and how people must have just continued to flock to the Lord. Person after person, case after case, day after day. I'm sick, I'm diseased, I'm ill, I want healed. I can't help but wonder if maybe that's one of the reasons, certainly not the sole reason, but I can't help but wonder if maybe that's one of the reasons why Jesus prayed so often. That had to be literally draining as far as the number of people who came to see him. I'm not a doctor, but it's not hard, whether you listen to a doc or not, to talk about their profession, it's not hard to imagine to some degree what being a doc would be like. Imagine being a physician and having to tell a patient, and not just on one occasion, but perhaps several times during your career. You say to the patient, the person who's come to see you, I can't help you, I'm sorry. And the person who hears those words, I can't help you, the person turns to us as the doc and says, well, what do you mean? You're the doctor. You've been trained in the art of medicine. You've gone to a medical school, maybe one of the best available medical schools. You have all kinds of resources. I've seen your books, and you've got other doctors to talk to, and you've got hospital resources. What do you mean? You can't help me. Compassionate doctors surely must feel some sadness. It must prick the deepest part of their being to sometimes say to a person, I've done all I know. I've checked. I've exhausted all the resources. We've looked at all the medicine. And I can't help you. You see, when we think about doctors, we know that they cannot fix every problem. Now, certainly there are some problems that can be corrected. There's some health conditions which can be lessened as far as a seriousness. There may be some health conditions which can be successfully managed. But sometimes doctors are in a position where they say, you're basically a hopeless case. I'm so sorry. Nothing more can be done. The picture played out before us so many times also has a parallel in the spiritual realm. Pulling from Galatians chapter 6, verses 2 and 5. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, Paul said that we are to help bear the burdens of others. That's a simple statement. It's easy enough to understand and do. And sometimes a doctor, just like a Christian, can help someone bear the burden. Maybe the doctor can listen. In going back to the visit that I described in the earlier lesson, the doctor said a high percentage, you know, and again, I'm thinking it's 20-25%. He said, a lot of what I do is just listening to people. Person knows maybe that they can't be cured, and they just want somebody to hear that they care. Somebody wants to just bend my ear for a while. And I'm sure every doc has flaws. That's probably true for the one that I see. But at least he's indicated that he's willing to just sit back and listen to people. But then as we move down a little bit in Galatians chapter 6, we also find a practical point from Galatians chapter 6 and verse 5. And here Paul says the opposite side of the coin is this, for each man shall bear his own burden. That's sometimes what the doc has to say to someone. I can listen. I can offer you all my advice. I can give you some of the best medicine that I know of, but sometimes you're going to have to bear your own burden. That's true for us as a Christian as well. When someone has been told, I have only a few months to live. When someone has been told, I have a loved one, and I've just received news that they've been killed. We do not have the power or the ability to undo that death. If someone comes to us and shares with us a diagnosis that they only have a few months left to live, we do not have the ability to miraculously cure that individual. As you listen to people, as you have that desire to help people, sometimes as an individual communicates the difficulties that they're going through in life, you feel like the hands are tied. I'd like to help. I'd like to assist. I'd like to do something for you, but I'm sorry. In this case, I do not have the power or the resources to give you what you want. Doctors somehow have to come to grips with that as they engage in the practice of medicine. And that's got to be a hard thing for a physician. But as Christians, that's also something that we need to come to grips with at times. We must realize that there are going to be cases where situations will arise and we can't fix everything. Sometimes we can offer some help. Maybe we can help bear that burden for a little bit. But there will be cases where some people want us to wave the magic wand. I know that as well as anybody, working as a preacher. I've had over the years sometimes people come to me and pretend as if I have a magic wand. And if I just say the right words, if I just have the right idea pop in the head, I can make my magic wand and everything's going to be better. I once had a mom come to see me several years ago. And this mom is a woman who probably made every wrong parenting decision in the book. Everyone. And she brought her son to me. Son, I'm guessing, was 16, maybe 17 years of age. And mom could see that things were not going well. Mom, at least I thought he was probably headed to prison in the near future, and I suspect that she thought the same thing. Mom brought that boy to me thinking that I could straighten him out. I said, I'm willing to talk to him, and I did. But you know, 60 minutes of talking to me could not undo years of bad parenting. And that would have been true, I think, for anybody. Don't expect months or years of bad behavior to simply be solved by showing up on somebody's doorstep and undoing bad parenting or something else that's been going on for a decade or more. We can do what we can do. But at the end of the day, God says each one needs to bear his own burdens. We, though, as we look at our country, have reached a time. And we have at least a generation and probably another generation or two in the future if things don't change. Of people who are not all that interested in bearing their own burdens. Some have reached the point in their life where they've been taught or they've come to think, maybe because of teaching from some place, where it's the job of others to bear their burdens. Not my problem, not my burden. Let's have somebody else take care of that. If there's a disaster, sometimes that's seen in the thinking, let's have the government come in. We could do some things on our own. We could start the recovery process, but let's wait for the government to show up. But our culture is becoming more and more averse to people bearing their own burdens. Well, what do we find in the book of Galatians? Yes, we can help in some cases, but also Paul says there are going to be some burdens that people need to learn to bear on their own. It's not discussed, perhaps, in medical school. Maybe it is. But if you talk to a doc, you'll probably find some physicians who will readily admit that there are patients who lie to them. Now, there are different reasons given as far as why patients lie to their docs. Some lie to the doctor because they don't want to get a lecture. There are some others who lie to their doctor because they feel like their doctor is going to judge them for something. And then you have this jewel. There are some people who will lie to their doc because they don't want to be seen in a negative light. If we just shade the truth, if we outright lie, the doc's going to see me in a more positive light, so let's go ahead and make sure he doesn't get all the right facts. Doctors are lied to about all kinds of things. It's not uncommon for a doctor to turn to a patient and say, do you smoke? If yes, how much? Do you drink? If yes, what do you drink and how much? I've read that some doctors, as they ask those questions and as they receive those answers, they're inclined, if they get a positive answer, they're inclined to enhance a patient's answer. For example, if a patient is asked, do you drink? And the patient says, well, I drink a beer a day. A doctor might be inclined to say, okay, well, that means three or four. They were willing to admit this much, and chances are there's probably going to be a lot more. If a person is asked about smoking, and the person says, well, I smoke half a pack a day, especially if maybe they stutter and stammer a little bit, the doctor is going to think, well, it's not half a pack, it's a full pack, maybe a pack and a half. And then, if that patient is really sneaky, and the doc says, do you drink? And the person says, well, yes, I drink three beers a day. What the patient doesn't say is the size of those three cans. You might be thinking it's a 12-ouncer, and maybe it's the giant can. An outright lie still seems unacceptable to some people. But as we think about this area, sometimes in the minds of some, especially patients, if they shade the truth, it doesn't seem to be all that bad. I once had an EMT tell me, and I thought about this conversation several times since I had it with this person, but I once had an EMT tell me that as he goes out on calls, he tells people in the most emphatic way, just tell me the truth. Just tell me the truth. Have you been using illegal drugs? Have you been doing something that caused this condition? I'm here to treat you. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to get some information to put it on some kind of recording device and turn it over to the police. My job is to help you have the best health available. You need emergent care. That's why I'm here. And for me to give you proper care, tell me the truth. But you know what that EMT has found over the years? Not told the truth. Maybe the person took a couple or three or four illegal drugs and maybe they'll admit to one. Or maybe they took a large amount of something and they will try to diminish the account. A parallel to not telling the truth is also found in the spiritual realm. Christians who have burdens, going back to Galatians chapter 6 for just a moment, may ask how they're doing. And the person says, oh, fine, things are good with me. But you know, if the truth were known, if we could take that fine answer and we could peel that back and look underneath, you know what we'd find? You know what we'd find in some cases? That person is drowning. Not literally. But maybe that person is somehow submerged in debt and wondering what's going to happen to them tomorrow. Maybe they're about to lose their house. Maybe they're about to lose their job. Maybe they're about to lose something else. Another may have received bad news, very bad news from the doctor. And maybe they don't want to get into all the specifics, but rather than even acknowledge that something might be amiss. How are you? I'm good. Some have struggled with fear or doubt. And when asked about those concerns or those difficulties, I'm good. No fear, no doubt in my mind. Lives have been told about whether or not a person was really forgiven. Have you forgiven her, him, them? Oh, sure, we're good. Not true. Some have lied about their conversion or perhaps being a member of the Lord's church. A couple months ago, we had a lady show up on a Wednesday night. We actually had two people coming in and asking for help on a Wednesday evening. The lady who was here first came in and said, I'm a member of the church. I'm from the state of Florida. I am a hurricane refugee. Stan and I were available. We spent some time with her. We spent a good bit of time with her. There were some things that we felt like needed to be discussed and followed up on, so we said that we would check with her the next morning. She had lodging taken care of until noon the next day. So we made contact with the congregation that she claimed that she was a member of in Florida, and this was really one for the books. When I called the secretary, I told her who it was, and she just started to laugh. I thought, well, that's kind of an odd thing to do. And she said, I bet you're wondering why. I said, well, yeah, it does seem a little odd that I introduce myself and you start to laugh. She said, I better know why you're calling. And I told her, she said, yep, I figured it was her. And I conveyed, and she said, well, the woman did live here in Florida. She has also had some association with this congregation, but she said, let me tell you what. She said, the day the hurricane blew through, we had our windows up. And not because the hurricane forced them up. You see, they were in a section of Florida that was completely untouched by that hurricane. So this lady had left Florida, but she was by no means a hurricane refugee. So there are people who come along sometimes and they say, well, this is true or this is that, and it's simply not a case. And this is simply not true. In this case, she was a scammer. It can be frustrating, very frustrating to deal with people who lie. As we start thinking about many of the parallels between doctors, physical doctors, and the spiritual life, there are many parallels. For instance, our mind might be turned back to the book of Ephesians, what Paul had to say about the devil. Over there in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 16, Paul made it clear that the devil has many fiery darts. Satan's not content to let people merely have the burdens of life. And we would, even if there were no devil. Because of sin, we'd still have plenty of burdens. The devil likes to keep things stirred up, especially when it comes to Christians. Some of what Satan does, and maybe it's true to say that a lot of what he does, is designed to fatigue God's people, designed to wear them out. And maybe the things that he uses to bring about spiritual fatigue, it doesn't work today, it doesn't work tomorrow, it doesn't work by the end of the year, by the end of 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. But the devil will continue to use those fiery darts to see if one day he can finally cause God's people to reach the point where they say, as we mentioned earlier this morning, I'm done, I'm through. I'm ready to toss in the towel. I quit. We see that reflected in the life of Jesus. You may remember from Mark chapter 1 and verse 13 that Jesus was tempted in the wilderness for 40 days. Some, as they look at the Lord's temptations, they say, well, Jesus had three temptations. He did, but that's not the entire story. Jesus was tempted for 40 days, more than a month. And after Jesus has undergone those temptations, which are not described in any detail, but after more than a month of temptation, then the devil comes to him. And it is at that point that Satan offers Jesus three more temptations. Maybe you've seen a person who's tired, exhausted, worn out, fatigued. And the person in that state will do what he or she would not normally do. Seems like that's what Satan thought he would try with Jesus. Let's work on him for 40 days. Let's see if we can wear him down. And then I've got three more fiery darts to toss his way. And let's see if I can ensnare him. I've heard people sometimes say, I'm so tired, I'm so worn out. Just do what you want, I don't care anymore. Doctors quit. But as we saw from that slide earlier, what does Paul say? 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, be unmovable, steadfast, always abounding in the work of the Lord. You know that your labor is not in vain. Talk to doctors about what frustrates them. One of the things that you probably hear as they went down the list would be eating habits. Some doctors, as they ask their patients what they eat, and I think, again, here's an area where probably some patients lie, but they ask about the eating habits of their patients, and they probably cringe. Some years ago, I was with Teresa and Beth, and we stopped in at a Taco Bell in town. And as luck would have it, our family doc was there. Family doc came up to me. She said, do you eat here often? Docs are concerned about the quality of food that people put in their bodies. This is the final point, and once again, notice the parallel to the spiritual realm. People are sometimes not concerned about the physical food. Sometimes people are not concerned about the spiritual food. That junk food can sometimes, in the mouths of many, taste so good. I want another Twinkie, I want another Ho-Ho, or I want another, you can go down the list and say that's my preference. But that's also true when we think about religious information, the healthy stuff, that sound doctrine. For a lot of people, they say, well, that's like spinach or eggplant or something else, and I want no part of it. I want the candy. I want the stuff that tastes sweet. I want the fluff. Yeah? Just like in the secular realm, sometimes what tastes good or seems good is not good. And that's why in the Old Testament as well as the New, you have a lot of emphasis on truth. Pursue the truth. Buy the truth and sell it not. Sanctify them in the word. Thy word is truth. Paul talked about the word truth in Ephesians 6 when he dealt with the Christian armor. We need that. We need to know the truth, buy it not, abide in the truth so that we can be saved. So many parallels, some that we didn't mention. But we still come down to the basic point that we started with earlier. We need to abide in the doctrine of Christ and not get tired. Regardless of how many more years we have left, be faithful to God every single day. We've taken the first steps, faith, repentance, confession, baptism. Now we need to stick with the program every single day. Die in Christ. Be faithful till we draw our last breath. Can we help you in those ways today? To get back on the path of faithfulness if that's not where we are, or to step onto that path by obeying the gospel of Christ? If so, let us know how we can help. Do it now, please, as we stand and sing the selected song.